The Secret Origins Podcast, Episode 13.
Welcome to episode 13 of the Secret Origins Podcast. We have now gone unlimited. I am your host, DFJ and Mike, and joining me is Lupus Convoy. Hello, sir.
Hello, sir. How goes?
It goes. Don't really want to talk too much about this, but we are both jealous of everyone that's at a certain convention this weekend. And, yeah, I've seen pictures of toys that I want, and there's a bunch of Transformers books that I want, namely Exodus and Allspark 2, or Allspark Almanac 2.
Next week, or Wednesday.
Oh, really?
Yep.
For Almanac 2?
Yeah, it's coming out. Diamond's shipping it out this week.
Yeah.
So, comic day.
I'm going to have to, after the convention, I'm going to have to email Mr. Sorensen, because I've asked him a couple of times about possibly getting a review copy of it, and I would write up a blog post and do some sort of audio review on all things Transformers or something like that. So maybe, but yeah, I read the first four chapters of Exodus. I want that. That's probably the only prequel novel or any kind of prequel thing as far as Transformers goes that I actually will ever probably read, because I don't like.
I hear they took a lot from different canons and put it in the book.
Hey, it's pretty cool though.
Lugnut.
Oh god, I hate Lugnut. But anyway,
animated, good.
Animated is good, but I the two characters I really cannot get past are Bulkhead and Lugnut. Number one, it's the two combinations of the teammates is Astro Train and Blitzwing, not fucking Lugnut. But anyway, that's just a whole other topic there. Today we will be reviewing the first five episodes of Justice League Season 3. Now, I need to say that, yes, we understand that the show technically could have been it in Starcross 2 weeks ago when we talked about, or actually 4 weeks ago when we talked about Starcross. But they got picked up, they revamped the whole show, and it is now in half-hour form. There's only a few instances, I think maybe only one instance, where there's a two-parter, which is the Season 3 finale, which is the Once in Future Thing two-parter. So we will review that one, as we have done before with the two-parters. It'll just be one long discussion on both parts. But for the most part, these episodes now, as they're just basically single stories, until we hit the Cadmus arc, we'll just be doing them as regular episodes. You have anything else you'd like to say before we get into the actual episodes?
We're going to see a lot of difference between the story arcs that going forward. They're not going to be long, drawn out, or giant epic stories that really could have fit into one episode. The pacing's quicker, the character development isn't quite as high as it was in the first. But that's also because we've got so many characters that we're going to be seeing left and right.
Well, they added 52 heroes. I mean, it's 52 heroes in total. So
plus all the flashback characters from the villains and everybody else from earlier in the seasons.
Yeah.
So it's going to be. I think this is where we see it really tighten up.
Yep. All right. So we are going to get into some episodes.
Each of you brings something different to the table: strength, speed, stealth, whatever. But we're all equal in at least one way. Each of us is willing to make the sacrifices a hero needs to make, even the ultimate one. Since there are so many of us, We have a chance to do more than just put out fires, both literal and figurative. We can be proactive. We can do some real good in the world. But we're going to have to be organized. Jean will be up here keeping an eye on everything. He'll be the one to decide who's going where and when. I know a lot of you are used to making those decisions for yourself. But from now on, we have to be more coordinated than that. We can't be cowboys anymore. Or cowgirls.
We sent the lantern for you because you never gave us an answer.
Come on, I don't belong up here, fighting monsters and aliens and supervillains. I just helped the little guy. And a big club like this, you tend to forget all about him. So gee whiz, I'm flattered to be asked and all, but no thanks.
Suit yourself. Those monsters you don't fight, they tend to step on little guys.
First up today is Initiation. Before we get into the plot, I just want to say they did say that they were going to rebuild at the end of StarCross, but we didn't know how they were, and wow, did they do it in a big way, and we're going to get into that right now. And in an undisclosed location, Green Arrow, woo, love Green Arrow, I love him in this so much, thwarts an armed robbery of a supermarket. Green Lantern arrives and teleports himself and Arrow up to the Justice League's new watchtower. Arrow first sees the five other members of the League, Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, John Jones, and Flash, and then looks around and sees a much larger crowd of superheroes. Superman addresses the assembled crowd, saying that the new expanded League has a chance to do real good in the world, provided that they work together. And in coordination, that is Jean's responsibility. While he speaks, Batman talks privately with Green Arrow, who politely declines membership. In his opinion, the League is too focused on quote-unquote big threats like monsters and alien invasions, while Arrow is devoted to helping the quote-unquote little guy. Jean hands out a mission to a nuclear signature is moving across the region in Southeast Asia. Lantern, Captain Atom, and Supergirl are chosen to investigate. Arrow, reluctant to use the teleporter again, I love that. You're not playing pinball with my molecules again. Focus, Lupus, focus.
I am focused.
Turn that damn Twitter application off.
It is.
and insists on hitching a ride home in the Javelin. On the way, Lantern and Captain Atom explain that the country they are visiting is notoriously xenophobic, and that it is a criminal act for United States citizens to go there. Arriving, the team is attacked by country's military forces. Their commander, General Quan, orders his men to stand down and apologizes firmly and rejects their offer of help and tells them to leave. Jean tells them that they can't go against the government's wishes, but Arrow is unwilling to accept this and strikes out on his own. He sees Quan's forces evacuating peasants across a bridge when a truck spins out of control. Arrow helps save the driver. Angrily, Quan insists that everything is under control. And then a gigantic nuclear-powered robot, wonder if it transforms, appears, raining destruction everywhere. The rest of the team arrives. Captain Atom attempts to absorb the robot's energy, but there is too much for him to handle. Likewise, the robot is too strong for Supergirl. Well, she is a carbon copy of Kal-El, but anyway. And Lantern is seriously injured. The team finds a group of the country's scientists who admit that they built the robot to, quote, protect us from the foreigners, but they lost control and have carbon rods that will disable the robot's reactor, but they have to be inserted into a cavity in its chest. Captain Atom takes the rods and says he has to try, even though the heat from the reactor may destroy him. On his attempt, the heat ruptures his containment suit, and he has to fly into the atmosphere where there is an explosion of energy. Captain Atom goes boom. Enraged, Supergirl flies at the robot and isn't able to stop it. Green Arrow picks up the remaining three rods and tries to shoot them into the cavity with his bow, but misses twice. Breaking the last rod into pieces, he latches a piece of it to the end of his arrow and makes the shot. The robot shuts down and Supergirl demolishes it. League scientists manage to recapture most of Captain Atom in space and are in the process of replacing him in a new suit. Lantern tells Supergirl that she acted recklessly, but she did a good job. Batman asks Arrow how he feels now about joining the League. Arrow is still hesitant, but changes his mind when he catches sight of Black Canary. suiting up in the locker room. That's it. Your thoughts, sir?
Okay, Green Arrow fighting lower class criminals.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty cool. How aerodynamic really are punching glove arrows? Really? just the characters that I understand who they are now, like Atom Smasher, Stars and Stripes, Elastic Man. Mm-hmm. Just so many people there that I wish I could have freeze framed and gone through everything. It was kind of like watching like reading the old Dreamwave comics. Mm-hmm. Where they'd have just random characters in the background and be like, "Ooh, who's that? Ooh, who's that?"
I'm sorry to interrupt you. When we do our season 3 recap, and I've already grabbed it, but the special features audio. You need to make sure that you watch all the special features, because there's one. Not Unlimited Reserve. I don't know. It's something that's on the first disc, I believe. It's like Going Unlimited or something. And they're talking about this whole thing, what you're mentioning. And Stan Berkowitz said, you know, you look at these things, you look at a crowd shot, and you see, you know, Captain Atom with Booster Gold and just all these other heroes that you would have never seen animated before, and that's what they were going for in this show.
I do remember that there's it's really hard to find, but there's Drawing the DC Animated Way.
Mm-hmm.
That came out well before I think it's just when Superman was starting to come out, and it's got a lot of those characters.
Yep.
So like Wildcat and Santana and just lots of really cool things.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. What else we got? The thing that is kind of bothering me is that we're getting a lot of spoilers now in the opening.
Well, okay, yeah, and they mentioned that in some of the... There's two commentaries on the first disc. There's one for The Return and the one for This Little Piggy. They mentioned that they tried not to do so much spoiler shots, but sometimes it just couldn't be helped.
Yeah.
You know, when I first originally had the individual season sets before I had the complete series, and I went from JL to JLU, I felt the same way. Now, I like it because it's part of the show. It gives you a glimpse into what you're going to get, but it doesn't give you everything. It kind of gives you a little teaser image. Now, I'm sure there are going to be some episodes where there's more spoiler images than probably need be, but
what else?
Stop twittering.
I'm not twittering. let's see. GL totally pumping out energy. Okay, the size of the watchtower. It's not just big, like the first one was pretty big. This thing's got its own series of satellites.
Yeah, see, that's that was one of my notes, that because the way I've taken my notes and the way I've taken my notes for the entire show is I take it as I watch them, so I have like six notes before I get to that, because it's like when GL I'll mention that later. Whoa, that's a bigger, badder, more impressive watchtower. I wonder what that cost Bruce.
Two line items of the art.
yeah. And at first, when I first saw the Watchtower, when I was just watching it for enjoyment before I even thought up this podcast, I didn't really notice the other two satellites. And I just saw the giant scope of the Watchtower, and I'm like, holy shit!
It's huge.
Yeah, it's huge.
Let's see, okay, you cannot tell me that this isn't like China.
Oh, it so is.
It is. It's over the top China.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay, the giant monster. I'm going to the evil dark side of Marvel Comics on this one, but it the first thing I thought of when I saw it was Holocaust from Age of Apocalypse.
You're gonna have to give me some more context on that.
He's basically just he's a one-armed giant suit of armor that is a skeleton inside and atomic radiation.
Oh, you mean Apocalypse, like as in the '90s X-Men cartoon Apocalypse?
Yeah, like the '90s cartoons, X-Men Alpha. It might have been actually in the X-Men animation.
Well, there was a in the X-Men 1992 series, Apocalypse was in there, but I mean, is that what you're talking about? That
yeah, there character? Was a there was a offshoot comic line where, I think it was for almost a year, where in the story arc, Professor X died way back in history and whole alternate reality. But he was one of the Horsemen of Apocalypse who killed most of humanity.
Yeah.
But yeah, I actually sent you a copy of.
I'm looking at it now.
And it that was the first thing I thought of when I saw him. Just oh my god, it's Holocaust. I thought it was interesting that, you know, the Justice League's big bad superheroes, yay, you know, everyone loves them. Apparently not all nations appreciate them. And it's very nice that they actually have that, okay, the country doesn't appreciate us, we don't want to deal, they don't want to deal with us, okay, we can deal with that. Get the hell back on the Javelin.
That becomes, I'm sorry to interrupt you again, but that becomes a mainstay plot thread throughout the entire rest of the series. Especially when we get to the Cadmus arc. But yeah, I mean, because, you know, you go from 7 people to over 50, you're basically considered an army. And they bring that up in later episodes, but continue, sorry.
Okay, so the point where Green Lantern leaves, or Green Arrow leaves, with the Geiger counter. Really? They only have one Geiger counter? We know where the budget went, so...
Yeah. I was expecting a PKE meter, actually.
Yeah, it also kind of looked like a Mega Supreme in one shot for some reason.
You mean the giant robot?
Yeah.
Yeah, he kind of does a little bit.
Okay, so this is a sci-fi medical joke, but, yeah, GL went down hard, and it also explains why he's bald now. All that radiation.
Actually, he was bald before they went on the mission, but if you remember back to A Better World...
Oh, that's true.
Remember back to A Better World, the alternate GL was bald and had a goatee.
Well, of course, he's the evil Green Lantern. He's gonna have a goatee. Oh, God, there was just... the quote of... Well, Kara had so many really cool little quotes. Alpha Male Smackdown?
Yeah.
That made me laugh. The little wolf in me just totally was like, funny. 1, 4... why didn't they contact the League prior to trying to fight this thing down? It's that big and it's that bad. They should have gotten more reinforcements.
Well, the problem is that, like you said before, there are countries that don't want the Justice League help, and the general had even said, we don't need your help. So, like I said a second ago, they didn't want to seem like an army bringing everybody down for this giant robot. Yes, I agree with what you're saying. They should have brought at least a few more stronger League members, maybe, into the thing, but... there's just no way they would have done that with the way the country felt about getting help from them.
At this point, they're already superseding what the country wants, so I don't think it would really
matter. Yeah, that's true.
Our people are in danger now. No, we're going to trump you on that one. Let's see, we had lots of hero death symbolism in this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, something that really bothered me, it only took one rod. Really? Not even a full rod, a part of a rod.
Yeah, that's what really irks me about that.
And Cap Adams flying around with like 20 of them underneath his arm, and it's not affecting him.
Yeah. Well, see, the thing is, my note on that was, and this is specifically about Green Arrow. This is after Captain Atom dropped the rods and flew off into space. So trying to shoot the full rods into the robot doesn't work. But splitting the rod in half and attaching it to an arrowhead does? What the fuck?
I'm sorry, but that much weight, he would have to do a lot of compensation, and his bow would not fire that well. Mm-hmm. Even if it is a British U-bow.
Now I have a question. I don't know if you're a big GA fan, but his accuracy with his arrows, is it because he has the arrows? Is it some sort of magical thing, or is he like a master archer, or what's the deal?
He is a master archer. Origin story is he was like Bruce, you know, multi-billionaire, rich, spoiled playboy. He was attacked by pirates, if I remember correctly.
Right. I remember the actual origin story, and I remember that he did train with arrows, but it seems...
He has no superpower. He has absolutely no superpower.
Right,
so
I know.
He's super accurate.
Okay, but if he's super accurate, why the hell couldn't he be accurate with shooting the actual rods in instead of having to split it in half and attach it to an arrow? That's why what I'm asking is there something with the arrows themselves
that... Not as far as I know. I mean, honestly, it could be like they're trying to make it more aerodynamic, but really, I mean, it would add aerodynamics because of the feathers on the end to allow, you know, more accuracy, but the weight in the front, it would just flip over, honestly. in reality, if you were to do that, it wouldn't go far off the bow, and it would just go right down in the ground. Mm-hmm. So I don't. It's a kid's cartoon show.
Yeah.
Oh, do you have anything else? Because I mean, I've got.
Tons of stuff. I mean, we've covered some of it, so I'm going to skip those notes. We've covered some of the stuff, but I've got tons of stuff. My first note was, "Whoa, Green Arrow! Yes, because I love Green Arrow for some strange. I don't know what it is about his character. Well." I don't know what it is about his character. I just think he's so cool. And you mentioned it before, the boxing glove arrow. That was kind of funny. We already talked about John's haircut and facial stuff there. Ready? Ready for what? Oh my god, where'd they go? and then Superman going, the last part is me... replying to Superman's line of glad you can make it, and then I put dot 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 holy shit, because it, like I said, it shows the first fire, it shows the other original League members, and it spans out. I'm like, holy shit,
a lot of people.
Yeah. Supergirl, aka Kara Kent, everyone knows her secret identity on the Watchtower. That makes no sense.
Oh, why not?
Well, they already know Clark's for the most part. Most of them do anyway.
Yep. I mean, can you imagine if they had Connor in there too?
Yeah, actually, he shows up later. Not Connor. Speedy does.
Oh, okay.
Unless Connor is Speedy, I don't remember. Yeah, he does. Not this episode, but he's in another episode of the show. Flight crew in the Watchtower. Wow, I feel like I'm watching Top Gun only animated. Oh, here's the other one I was going to bring up. When GL starts the engine of the Javelin, it lurches forward, making him lean back. Why am I flashing to Knight Rider and Kit's turbo boost?
I can only use it once per episode.
I think you're marched against... I think you're what I marched against back in college.
I thought I had that written down, too.
I love GA. He's so awesome. It's a government cover-up! Which that'll come in way later as far as the question, which I love the question.
We love the question.
Yeah, but the government cover-up thing is what GA said in this one. Yikes, a big giant nuclear robot. I love the guy, the little foreign guy with the group that's trapped on the embankment. He tests the Green Lantern's ring bridge.
That was cute.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. I can't believe you didn't bring this up. After GL is in the hospital and he wakes up, Shiera!
Yeah.
I think that's the only reference we get to her until...
she shows back up.
Yeah. Being made up of nuclear energy is very dangerous because atoms explode.
Big bada boom.
Wow. Yeah. I don't think we needed the Lilu reference. Thank you very much.
Multipass.
Supergirl gets scolded and commended at the same time. Eh, I don't know. Okay. At the end, I have two more, but that's it. The Batman Green Arrow exchange is very cool. However, after it happens, watching Batman just walk around the Watchtower, just in general, is very strange to me.
He's imposing fear on the rest of the on the people just to make sure they know exactly where their place is.
Overall, I think this was a very excellent start to the new season, to the new technically a new show. The 30-minute type styling of single story episodes works well. We do get to see the previous League members, or the original League members, I should say.
What's left of them?
Well, come on now.
Hey, they're short somebody. Wait. Okay, so is it just me, or is it great that there's Batman and Green Arrow, the two guys without any superpowers, that are the best known guys without superpowers, and they're just chilling out at the gym? And they're the ones that are interacting the most and arguing about if Green Arrow should join or shouldn't.
A lot of what I've noticed about the JLU cartoon, the unlimited version of Justice League, is that between Green Arrow, Green Lantern, and Batman, they have the most interaction throughout the show. The GL Batman stuff will come in once we get to Once in Future Thing, because that's predominantly a Batman Green Lantern episode.
Mm. And may I just say, yes, straight people got that wonderful shot of Diana, but we got that great shot of Ollie. Yes! Finally some eye candy.
Wait, what?
Huh? The shower scene. All the girls and all the gay guys got plenty of eye candy with just Green Arrow coming out of that shower.
Oh, yeah, okay.
You guys got that great shot of Black Canary bending over.
Oh, well, she didn't really bend over. She kneeled. She was sitting down, and she bent over to pull up her stocking. That's not really
suggestive. That's for sure. That music.
I don't know. Anyways, all right. So we are gonna move on.
Sorry if I scared you.
What'd you get him?
I'm not saying anything. He'll hear and spoil the surprise.
He can hear that, too.
How about you?
He's not the easiest person in the world to buy birthday presents for.
Bruce, you didn't get him a gift certificate.
No. Cash. I mean, what do you buy for the man who has everything?
Next up, we have For the Man Who Has Everything. Batman and Wonder Woman have arrived at the Fortress of Solitude to pay their respects to Superman on his birthday. Upon arrival, they discover their Justice League teammate is standing in place, unaware of his surroundings and under the spell of a mysterious and alien-looking organism. What they do not immediately realize is that the last son of Krypton has been subdued by the Black Mercy, a plant from a distant galaxy that renders its victims helpless and delusional in a dream world created for their heart's desires. Superman is now trapped in his mind in a most tantalizing prison, a Krypton that never exploded. While in his mind, Kal-El is married to a Kryptonian woman named Lawana, and has a little boy named Van-El. In the real world, Superman is still incapacitated as Mongol appears before Batman and Wonder Woman to reveal the origins of the plant. With Superman trapped in a world he himself has created, Mongol presumes that conquering the Earth will now be exceedingly simple. Batman tries futilely to buy time and gather clues about the plant, but Wonder Woman's rage cannot be contained. She engages Mongol, though it is apparent from the start that she is overmatched. Kal-El's journey of the mind takes him before his father Jor-El, now a tired old man forever shamed by his premature warnings of Krypton's destruction. However, Superman now sees the cracks in his false reality, and perhaps the words of his friend Batman bringing in the real world are starting to slip through into his subconscious. Batman pulls frantically at the Black Mercy in the real world as Kal-El, now realizing he is simply imagining his new life, tearfully says goodbye to a son who can never really exist. The Mercy comes free, but immediately clamps onto the chest of Batman, who now slips into his own dream world, a world where Thomas Wayne retaliated and overpowered the gunman that killed his wife and himself in reality. However, like Superman's dream, it turned sour when the gunman regained himself and shot Thomas. Superman tears after Mongol, and a brutally beaten Wonder Woman crawls to Batman's side to help him snap out of his dream world. Superman batters the would-be tyrant, even resorting to using his heat vision to burn Mongol's chest. However, before he can strike a decisive blow, Superman is distracted by the statues of his parents holding Krypton aloft, and in his moment of hesitation, Mongol gains the advantage. By now, Wonder Woman has helped Batman break free of the Mercy's illusion. Just before Mongol can slaughter Superman, the villain looks up to see Batman and Wonder Woman and a familiar plant falling towards him. The plant strikes, freezing Mongol in place and putting him under the spell of the Black Mercy. As the heroes ponder just what it is that Mongol's heart and mind is causing him to experience, Batman comments, "Whatever it is, it's too good for him." Mongol looks beaten but seemingly satisfied as cries of agony of dying people and sounds of war echo in his mind. Your thoughts, sir?
Hey, Lupus, here's your invisible jet in all capital letters.
Yes.
The fortress must have been breached. Okay, now, we all know you don't enter the Batcave, but there have been tons of people in the fortress. Hello? I don't know. Whatever.
You're not very good at you know, keeping the whole secret identity stuff secret.
Yeah, apparently not.
I think it's a compensation for the fact that he can just put on glasses.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, that's Lana Lois. How about Lanois? Actually, it's Loana. And yeah. Loana stands in for Lila Lerole, who was an actress and Kal-El's wife in the original story of Superman Animal, or Superman Annual number 11. Yeah, I hadn't looked at the wiki and got that last bit beforehand, so I was just trying to figure out the combination of the two names.
I was just like, Lana and Lois. Yeah. And then it did kind of sound like it was like Lois. And the job, being a reporter.
Yep. I think the only thing as far as Lana goes that they had was obviously the red hair. Because they still maintain Lois's purple eyes. Well, I don't know how anyone has purple eyes, but
it's actually genetically possible. Extremely, extremely rare. And it's mostly only found in females.
Yeah. Mongol. Okay, Lupus, bring on the hate.
Oh god, I hate this person with a passion. I don't care if his son ended up becoming like one of the biggest badass one characters in DCU, especially in the Sinestro Corps. I fucking hate this guy.
Okay, but why? There's gotta be a reason.
He's a horrible character. What does he do? Oh, he beats on Superman and he's a tyrant. Really? That's the most you've got going for you? Really? Come on. Plus, it was from the episode that shall not be named.
Yeah, true.
But I will give props for the whole Black Mercy showing up.
Okay, now explain this. You mentioned this to me off-air.
Okay, there is a story arc in Green Lantern Corps where the Black Mercy is actually a planet-wide sentient plant. And it attacks several GLC members and actually was a member of the Sinestro Corps and Green Lantern Corps at one point.
Uh-huh.
So it was like, oh my god, this is cool, I forgot about this. So that was awesome.
Well, you know, I'm wondering where the hell Mongol got it, because in the Flash, well, in Superman's dreamscape, it shows it being on in Jor-El's lab. So was in this in this continuity, could we assume that Mongol was on Krypton at some point?
I think based on the fact that it was his dream and it was being controlled by his subconscious, especially with the earthquakes, I think it was his subconscious mind saying, hey, this is the cause of this, and trying to slip it to him.
No, I can buy that. Neat trash can, I want that. I love that. Energy trash, talk about the ultimate ultimate recycle bin.
Definitely.
Crypto!
Yes, that was nice.
Yeah. Holy shit, Wonder Woman body slam Mongol, that was awesome.
There was a lot of really great Diana shots in this.
Yeah.
Why did they depower her? Were they trying to make Mongol seem like this big badass that only Superman could defeat? Because she's on par with Superman.
What do you mean depower her? They didn't depower her from...
She was getting her ass handed to her.
Well, yeah, because it's Mongol and he's... Yeah, granted, Wonder Woman is supposed to be super strong. I don't know why, honestly, but she does get her full armor abilities in this new cartoon down the line. I'm not sure if it's this season or next season, but she will have those unlocked at some point. He doesn't work, Batman. He tried to burn the thing off. It's like, oh, that ain't working. Have you ever seen the very first, the premiere episode of Superman the Animated Series, the three-parter, The Last Son of Krypton?
Nope.
Okay, well, Christopher McDonald, a.k.a. Shooter McGavin, is Jor-El. He was Jor-El in the original Superman the Animated Series three-part opener episode, and he is also Jor-El in this. So I thought that was very cool, a bit of continuity with voice actor. Well, Batman gets it off Superman, but rut-row raggy, it ends up on Batman.
Pretty much. The thing that I would have wanted to see is what would happen to Diana.
Yeah.
If she got it. Would she be back on Themyscira with her mom and with Batman?
I don't know. Talk about a threesome. Anyway. I fashioned a prison that you couldn't get out of without sacrificing your heart's desire. It must have been like ripping your arm off. While I agree that Mongol is a horrible, horrible villain, I love that line from him.
That was fairly decent.
And then, wow, Mongol really whooped up on Wonder Woman. Holy crap.
Yeah.
And then I think the last one I got here is... Ew, evil-looking tongue. Ugh.
Oh, I just wants to give you a little French kiss.
Add a tail to it and give it some robot parts, and there's Alice. And then,
that's King Facehuggers, but...
And then you already mentioned it, but whatever it is, it's too good for him.
Do we really want Mongol to have that pleasure?
No, not really.
It was great to see see his family alive, but it I think the fact that this came up to for him might have reinstated the whole, even more so than he might have before, but reinstated the whole why he does what he does, and we'll see that later on in Child's Play.
You mean Kid Stuff?
Kid Stuff, Child's Play, Kid Stuff.
Dude, get it right. There are no fucking puppets in here.
Wait, we're not going to see Scarface? The whole Batman embargo.
Yeah, we had the Bat embargo, but yeah.
Have we ever seen Batman, like, this pissed before? Not Batman, Superman this pissed before? Even fighting Darkseid?
Because
this is a
yes.
Whole...
In Twilight? In this? As far as him being emotionally and physically pissed, yes. In Twilight, in this, and then in the very final episode of Destroyer, when he's going against Darkseid, when he's like, you know, I always have to hold back and you know, wear kid gloves, but, you know, you big guy, you can take it. And so he doesn't hold back with Darkseid. So there's three instances of this. There might be more. As far as emotionally, he gets charged up with the whole Cadmus thing when he finds out about Kara's been cloned and everything that Cadmus does against the Justice League. But as far as physically, I think there's only three times. I could be wrong.
Okay. It just seemed like this is a whole new... But it was interesting to find out that he didn't lobotomize Mongol.
Well, all right. Now, wait.
He used his heat vision on his chest, but he...
Right.
I was wondering to see if he would go to the point where he would lobotomize him.
No.
Because that was something that was brought up in the earlier seasons when... when the Flash supposedly died in the alternate universe.
Well, yeah, but again, the key word there is alternate universe. And the reason why he didn't lobotomize Mongol is what the only thing I can assume is that because of what comes up later of Question and everybody finding out about the alternate universe, and you know the whole lines that could be drawn that because Luthor and the League are pushing. Or Luthor and Cadmus are pushing the League, that what would Superman do now? So that's the only reason why I don't think he did lobotomize Mongol. And you knew as soon as Wonder Woman ripped off the tongue-lashing plant that she was going to put it on him. So, I mean, I don't know.
That's all I got. All
right, we are going to move on.
You must stop this!
I must do nothing! I don't take orders from women!
He's weak! He'll get himself killed! Dawn!
Anybody want to give me a clue what just happened?
Sometimes it takes more strength not to fight.
Okay, next we have Hawk and Dove, which we know isn't a personal favorite of somebody, but... Okay, in his workshop, Hephaestus, the Greek god, is putting the finishing touches on a breastplate. Ares, another Greek god, do we see a trend, appears and demands his special order. Hephaestus finishes assembling his latest creation, the Annihilator, a gigantic suit of armor. To test it, Ares draws his sword, and the Annihilator springs to life, attacking him until he calls it off. In a war-torn city in the northern region of Casnia, Ares appears incognito as Mr. Serra, demonstrates the Annihilator to Nardok, the leader of the northern faction. It easily tears through a squad of Nardok's troops firing at it. Nardok is interested, but mentions how poor his people are. Ares smiles and says that they can pay him later. Nardok eagerly takes control of the Annihilator. In an unnamed city, a group of bank robbers are fleeing when they unluckily run into Wonder Woman, who has been taking a day off. She easily stops their getaway, but is unpleased and is about to inflict a much greater damage on them when Jean calls with a mission. The civil war in Casnia has flared up again, and Queen Audrey has asked for the League's assistance because the fighting could easily ignite conflicts all over the region. Wonder Woman rants about how senseless and belligerent humans are, but Jean warns her that she is becoming dangerously hostile herself. On the way, she stops to pick up the other two members of her team, brothers Hawk and Dove, who are in the middle of a bar fight with a group of patrons taking exception to Dove's pacifist views. In the southern Castanians' camp, a monk, Ares in disguise again, exhorts the Southern forces to attack the Northerners and take the land that is rightfully theirs. The Southerners launch an offensive. On the ride to Casnia, Hawk and Dove engage in one of many debates about the usefulness of negotiation versus action, peace versus war, etc., etc., etc. They arrive to see the Annihilator leading a counterattack against the Southerners. Diana, Hawk, and Dove attempt to stem the violence, but the Annihilator is unstoppable, even by them. In one encounter with it, Diana gets close enough to see the breastplate, and she recognizes Hephaestus' mark. She orders Hawk and Dove to fall back. Dove proposes that they abduct the leaders of the two factions and bring them face-to-face to negotiate. Wonder Woman approves the plan and tells them to carry it out while she flies off to see a man about a suit. The Southern forces fall back and the fighting dies down. Incredulous, Ares demands to know why Nardok has not pushed ahead to capture the Southerners' camp, which has enough weapons to equip even a greater offensive. Nardok says his people aren't interested in conquest, only keeping their territory secure. Ares goes berserk and delivers a tirade in his immortal guise, shouting that humans' only purpose is to slaughter as many of each other as possible, and that Nardok had better get with the program before the Southerners make their next move to destroy the North. That's what the Annihilator is for, but no, you're using it to play tag. Deciding that Sarah is crazy, Nardok orders him out, but Ares decides to replace Nardok as the Northerners' leader. Diana confronts Hephaestus at his workshop. He cheerfully admits to having made the Annihilator for Ares, and also confides that it is his habit to leave a weakness in all of his creations, just to prevent anyone from becoming too powerful. However, he refuses to tell her what the Annihilator is. You wouldn't want me to go around telling people what the weakness in your armor is, would you? She throws him against the wall and draws back her fist, and he smiles. With that attitude, you'll never figure it out.
So he doesn't... I'm sorry to interrupt you, but he doesn't... He won't tell her, but at the same time, he fucking tells her.
Go ahead.
That or she'll never figure out what the weakness in her armor is. Dove sneaks into the northern camp to find that Nardok... and propose peaceful negotiation. He is unaware that the Nardok is now actually Ares in disguise and is captured. In the southern camp, Hawk grabs the leader, but suddenly the camp is under attack by the Northerners. In the lead is an Annihilator with Dove tied to its front. Hawk tries to subdue the Southerners to keep them from firing at it, but the fighting is soon out of control. Diana arrives and tells the soldiers that they are being used. One soldier scorns her words and strikes her with his rifle. Enraged, she snatches the rifle away and raises it over his head, then realizes what Hephaestus meant. The Annihilator is fueled by aggression. Hawk has freed Dove, who runs to the entrance of the southern camp. As the Annihilator approaches, Dove tells the guards to lower their weapons. As they don't believe him, but he says that they can't defeat it anyway, so they might as well give it a try. As the Annihilator bears down on Dove, Hawk rushes towards his brother, but Diana holds him back. The guards lower their weapons, the Annihilator raises a fist to smash Dove, and then powers down, deprived of its fuel. Ares, enraged, appears in his full divine regalia, telling both sides to keep fighting. Seeing that they have been used, both sides stand down. Ares vows he will be back, finding a war to start wherever there's prejudice, misery, and inequality. Diana vows back that she'll be waiting. Ares disappears. With the fighting over, the Casnians withdraw, and the League bids farewell to the country. Okay, that's your thought. You know how you feel?
Exactly. I hate this episode.
It was not the best.
I cannot stand this episode. The only good thing is that you have a role reversal between Fred Savage and his older brother from Wonder Years. You have Fred Savage being the aggressor and the older brother, who I forget what his damn name is. I forgot to write it down. I forget who the voice actor is as the pacifist. But I don't have too many notes for this one. First of all, Diana looks hot in that outfit she was in on her day out.
I agree.
Yes. Secondly, holy crap, she's taking on some of Batman's traits. You didn't answer your summons. Out. Now.
Well, you know, if they're dating.
Yeah, true. Anyways. For me, this one was kind of boring. It's basically a Maid of Honor Part 3 without Audrey. I mean, there is mention of Queen Audrey, but it's...
Yeah, it was quick and I missed it, honestly.
Yeah. Although it does give good history on Wonder Woman, as far as it brings up her armor, as we will see in a later episode, where she will get her full power.
Yep.
I'll also say that throughout this episode, the music themes were awesome. Just the battle themes and just the background music in general. But as far as the overall plot, I hated it.
See, I'm torn on it. It wasn't that bad. It wasn't that great. It wasn't something for me to write home about. I will say, however, that the Hephaestus was spot frickin' on. I loved it. And the reason I say this is because I'm Mr. Pagan Celt, Greek Reconstructionist. I know my Greek myths, and the fact that they made him lame and ugly, and they made the subtle animosity between him and Ares was awesome. And for those that don't know, Hephaestus is basically married to the goddess of love and beauty, the hottest chick ever. And yeah, it's a trophy wife. She was given to him. He desperately loves her. She scorns him left and right and is sleeping with Ares.
Mm-mm.
And Hephaestus knows it. So it's interesting to see that little animosity and the fact that he's willing to give that little tidbit of information to Diana.
Well, the thing about Hephaestus or Hedephus or however the hell you say his damn name, and I did read that in the wiki about that, but the thing about him is, according to the wiki on this episode, like you were saying, you know, he is married to the goddess of love, or the god of love, whatever. But, you know, she's beautiful. He's kind of ugly.
He's ugly.
I guess you could say.
There's no way around it. He is
All right. He's ugly. But he makes beautiful works of art.
Yep.
So, there you go. But
she never sees that.
I don't think that we ever see Ares again in the series. I'm not sure if we can
hope, because I don't like him.
Yeah. I don't think we see Hephaestus. I'm not sure. But we will see the Annihilator again.
Mm.
I believe it's in Task Force X. We will see the Annihilator again. Yes, I don't care. This episode is so stupid.
Okay, really quick, Hawk and Dove's transformation sequence. Very much like something out of Tenchimoyo. For the Japanese, especially Tenchi Muyo and Love, the movie. If anyone has seen that, they would recognize that transformation sequence.
Awesome.
Also, the comment of, they thought we were food. I love that out of Diana. They weren't misunderstood, they thought we were food. okay, and then finally, Dove's uniform does not belong on a male. I don't care what you say. I grew up with the female Dove that we currently have.
You mean the powder blue?
The powder blue with just the face, the whole shebang. I'm sorry, that belongs on a girl, not on a guy.
Okay.
And for the comic geeks out there who are reading Brightest Day, yes, this is perfectly timed considering they're trying to bring back, Hawk's trying to bring back the original Dove. And then that's all I got.
Awesome.
Are you ready for the next one?
Yes, we are moving on.
I never heard of Nuvo-chan or Hallstrom until last night. This girl I've been seeing, she slipped it to me, said I could run with it.
The girl? Tell me more.
She's just a girl, blonde hair, blue eyes, real farmer's daughter type.
And a handshake like a vice?
Yeah, really strong.
How long you been seeing her?
About a week.
She have bad dreams?
More like tossing and turning.
Can't sleep at night. Hallstrom was getting drowned in emails from their legal department. Sounds like they were scared he was going to blow the whistle on something. Doesn't say what. I don't believe it. That crazy old Hardcastle was right. These guys claim they're splicing heartier tomatoes. But really, they've been experimenting with metahuman DNA.
Not just any DNA. My DNA. Look. This folder was marked Metropolis Training Exercises. It's me.
A little more mature than you, but I see your point.
They cloned me. We must have some sort of psychic link. That's why I'm seeing things I didn't do. this place?
It's a hologram chamber. Hard light constructs. Must be a training program.
My training program. So, what do you think? It's important that you like yourself. And I'm you. Just accelerated a few extra years. Plus better trained. And I have to say, a heck of a lot smarter. You lured us here. After your lackeys couldn't get rid of me at Star, you decided to deal with me yourself, on your home turf. It's like you're reading my mind, which is actually the problem.
Up next, we have Fearful Symmetry. On a deserted street at night, a man is running for his life, and his pursuer is none other than Supergirl. She corners him, and he swears that he didn't tell anyone anything, to which she replies, good, didn't you the only loose end? Before she can act, she is attacked by masked soldiers armed with jetpacks and laser guns that can actually hurt her. However, she makes short work of the soldiers, then takes off after the man again. Entering a large building, she is attacked by a bizarre-looking robot, which she fights off with difficulty. The man, having set the robot on her, retreats into a corner. Supergirl gives a cruel smile and her eyes glow red, and then the view shifts outside of Star Labs, from which there is a horrible scream, and in Smallville, Kansas, Supergirl bolts upright in bed with a cry. She is dressed in night clothes, but looks to the ceiling and sees that she has inadvertently burnt a hole in it. Aboard the watchtower, Supergirl goes to Sean for help. He spends a few minutes in telepathic contact with her and says he frankly doesn't have an answer. He doesn't know much about dreams, but admits that what he sees of hers is much more cohesive than any he's ever seen. Kara says the dreams are like memories and becomes terrified that she is actually doing these things. Green Arrow soothes her, but they are interrupted by the question, who has a different theory, namely, that it's all connected to a massive worldwide conspiracy. Question reminds her that there's a gap in her memory when she was treated at Star Labs after being injured in Superman's attack on Earth. Both Arrow and the Question accompany Supergirl to Star Labs, where she tells Professor Hamilton about her dream. Sympathetic, Hamilton assures her that she never left the lab. Hamilton shows her a surgical robot, much smaller version than the one in her dream, that he used to treat her, and theorizes that the dream is some sort of defense mechanism from the trauma of being operated on. As they leave the lab, Arrow appears convinced, but Question is not. They are barely away from the lab when a trio of military helicopters appears and attacks. One drops a robot that attacks Supergirl, while the others disgorge a squad of soldiers that attack Question and Arrow. They manage to drive them off, and Supergirl begins to suspect Question is right. The robot is a Z-8, which the League buys from the military for training purposes in bulk quantity. Question reveals that the officer in charge of the Z-8 project is none other than General Hardcastle, who commanded the military response to Superman's attack. The trio confront Hardcastle, living in a retirement in the country. He appears to be expecting someone to come and attack him, but a lot of what he says seems to confirm Question's theories. For a long time, the military and big businesses have been experimenting on metahumans, and also that the government has been keeping tabs on the members of the Justice League. Hardcastle himself has been involved in these projects, but whatever is happening now started after he retired. The trio leave disappointed. A short time later, someone who enters Hardcastle's home introduces herself as Tia. The spitting image is Supergirl, but with a different costume.
Dun dun dun!
In the watchtower, Kara starts awake after falling asleep on a desk. Instinctively, she knows that Hardcastle is dead. Jean calls Question's quarters with a new lead. A news program has reported the disappearance of a man named Gilbert Hallstrom, whose photograph Jean recognizes as the man from Supergirl's dream. Arrow and Supergirl are interested in the company Hallstrom worked for, a genetics firm called NuvoGen. But Question is more interested in the fact that only one news network had the story. Question kidnaps the reporter Lasser and interrogates him. Lasser says that the girl he's been seeing gave him the story, blonde hair, blue eyes, and a real farmer's daughter type. Arrow and Kara realize NuvoGen, infiltrate NuvoGen, and find evidence that they've been experimented with Kara's DNA. Kara realizes that they've cloned her. She sees file footage of the clone in action during a training exercise that matches her dreams, and that she must have had some kind of psychic link with the clone. Hearing someone coming, they run into another room and stumble into a holographic chamber simulating Metropolis. Then they are confronted by Tia, and realized that it was a trap. She says that as long as Supergirl has a window into her mind, Tia can't operate in secret. Kara fights, but is outmatched. Tia is physically older and thus stronger than her, and is trained as much more of a ruthless fighter. Kara is on the ropes when Question appears and reveals that Tia herself has been having sleepless nights. The connection runs both ways, and Tia has been receiving insight of what is like to have Supergirl's conscience, which is definitely a handicap for an assassin. Tia hesitates, giving Supergirl the chance to counterattack. Somewhere, a shadowy figure who is watching the fight via camera receives a telephone call and obeys his instructions, triggering the facility's self-destruct. Supergirl flies Question and Arrow away from the compound as it explodes. Supergirl reports to Professor Hamilton that searched the wreckage but never found Tia. Hamilton signs off, in the company of two military officers, attends to Tia, who is lying on a bed in Star Labs, badly injured. Hamilton addresses her by her full name, Galatea.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Okay, now, when I first watched this, I hadn't, not when I watched it for this specific episode, but when I had very first seen this episode, I'm like, okay, why is Supergirl being evil?
What's with the uniform change?
Yeah, exactly. So those soldiers that are after her have the same flying jetpacks as the guys in Superman the Animated Series. Very awesome. There was an episode, I believe it was the first episode of Superman the Animated Series, when they introduced Kaznia as the de facto terrorist country in the DCAU. They had those same jetpacks. Dead air. So I'll have to cut that. Holy shit. What the hell's wrong with you? Anyway, stop it. Hang it off. Damn it. Burn marks in the ceiling. Get that heat vision under control, girl. What the hell's wrong with you? After watching these cartoons, even before we came up with the idea for this podcast, I really dig the Question. I've never read any comics with him, but I really enjoy him. First of all, he is, even though he's a conspiracy theorist, he is pretty much blank from Dick Tracy.
But he's right.
No, I'm not. I'm saying as far as the blank face. What I allude that to is Madonna's character Blank from the Dick Tracy film in 1990. Yeah. So I'm not saying now. I don't want listeners to email in and saying you're wrong. What I'm saying is, as far as the design, as far as the face mask, I understand the Question and Blank are two different characters. So I don't like the fact that Hamilton's voice actor is different. Robert Foxworth replaces Victor Brandt as the voice of Emil Hamilton. I do not like... Well, Mr. Foxworth is all well and good as a voice actor. I don't like that replacement. I like the original voice better. Learn a new tune already. I love Green Arrow. I can't say that enough. I love Green Arrow in this cartoon series.
He's awesome.
Z8 Trainer. Wave high, Zeta.
Yep, pretty much. Give me a different head.
Boy, Question sure scared him.
He knows how to make an entrance.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm interested to find out if that's what he really looks like.
Oh, we will find out what he looks like a little bit later on in the series, actually.
Okay, I'd be interesting to compare it, because I know the original Question would just use gas and a specific polymer to make that face.
We'll find that... So. That comes up in a later episode, not this next episode, but later on in the podcast lifespan. Age Supergirl clone Mikey likes it.
A little more mature. It's okay. I'll say that a little bit for later.
And then I got from the DCAU wiki: Galatea is loosely based upon the comic book character Power Girl. Her costume is obviously similar, except she does not wear a cape, and her gloves and boots are white instead of blue. In the comics universe, Power Girl was Supergirl's counterpart from Earth 2, whereas in the DCAU, she is a clone. In the comics universe, she is a superhero, whereas in the DCAU, she is a villain.
And she is from Justice League International.
Ah, cool. Why am I bringing up a Ferris Bueller reference? Sawing bada bada bada, sawing bada. I forget why I even wrote that down. And my final note was, ooh, it's a government conspiracy. People in the shadows.
But there are.
True. That's true. What do you have for this one?
Okay, we've covered almost everything that I've got, but you can scream now if you want. That was just kind of creepy. Galatea saying that.
Okay, yeah.
Question has given us proof that boy bands really are evil.
But he starts singing the tune later on.
Yeah. And then, would you do go through my trash? Please! And go through everyone's trash. And then the name drops of Volcana and the Royal Flush Gang, which ties back to previous episodes. And... okay, the question to me is, he's got to be the number two investigator in the DCU, underneath the umbrella of the Bat family. But he's not only Bruce, but he's also part Fox Mulder from
the X-Files.
That's
a scary combination, dude.
But it works for this character.
I know, but it's a scary combination.
And I have to say, I kind of, as much as I've got a root for the family, I kind of like him a little bit more than Montoya as the question.
See, I'm not up to speed on all that. I know the question as this character from this cartoon.
But do you remember Montoya, like Detective Montoya from Batman?
Yeah, I remember that in the original animated series. Yeah, so she's the question
she's
now.
The current question.
Oh, I don't know if I like that.
She pulls it off well, though.
Oh,
she has to fight the original question.
Jeez.
Undead original question.
Oh, jeez.
That's what I got.
All right, so we are going to be moving on.
To my throne! This better be temporary. You sound weird. Whoa, so do I. I kind of like this. What's the matter? I wore glasses as a kid. Guess I need them again. Wow, I didn't even try to make these.
I hope not.
Cool. Will you stop messing around? We gotta find Mordred.
Bet the little punk's in there.
What a race!
Next!
My sister's crying. I think she's hungry.
Next! The Justice Babies!
What are you laughing at, Precious?
You! Mother sent you, huh? She shouldn't send a boy to do a man's job.
Launcher! Oh, I know! Just pick something!
Okay, tough guy?
Let go, I'm fine! That's not fair! Get him! Playtime is over. You'll share the fate of all my enemies. Execution!
And finally up today in season 13, episode 13 of the Secret Origins podcast, is Kid Stuff. In a remote mountain temple, Morgan Le Fay, and yes, I'm going to be calling her Morgan and not Morgaine, because it just sounds, unfortunately, it sounds a little too gay to me, but I don't know, it just sounds weird to say Morgaine, just, ugh. So Morgan Le Fay.
I kind of like it, honestly. It prevents the mix-up with the goddess Morgan, which is a scary... Well, evil thing.
Well, we all know who Morgan Le Fay is, or Morgana Le Fay, or whatever you want to call her from Arthurian legends, so at least most of us do. Leads her son Mordred to an intensely powerful artifact, the Amulet of First Magic, which will finally give them enough power to conquer the world, but Mordred snatches the amulet for himself, saying he is tired of living in her shadow. When she tries to tell him he is not mature enough to use the amulet's power, he shoots back that it doesn't matter because he is now more powerful than she is. Immediately, he casts a spell to banish all adults from the world. Elsewhere, a League team is thwarting a supervillain team of KG Beast, Cheetah, Blockbuster, and Copperhead. Wow. That's a horrible injustice, gang. Only two of the original members, yikes.
They just keep getting worse and worse.
Yes, they do. Who are trying to rob a gold vault. Just as the villains are subdued, Mordred's magical waves washes over all of them, sending both heroes and villains to the parallel dimension. With the rest of the world adults, Morgan appears, raging against her son's treachery, then off help the Justice League members to defeat him and reverse the spell. She is not powerful enough to overcome the spell, but she can exploit a loophole in it. Mordred decides to set up his kingdom in an amusement park, which he transforms to a more gothic appearance and announces himself to the confused children as their king. He leads them into the park's castle. Outside, four young children appear, the Justice Babies. Sorry, I had to say it. Transformed by Morgan to allow them back in and still possessed of their powers. Batman's personality is the least changed of all of them, though he comes off a bit bratty and without as much patience for the others. Wonder Woman is now of a bossy big sister, but still with a crush on Batman. Superman is naive farm boy, and Lantern, who appears to be the youngest in the group, has gotten back his boyish enthusiasm for toys and costumes, and short attention span, unable to decide what to do with his powers. I wonder what that sounds like.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The Leaguers enter the castle where Mordred is looking bored, using his magic to satisfy the modest needs of his subjects, toys, sweets, etc.
A cow.
Yeah. My sister is hungry. I think she needs milk. Yeah, very well, fine. Seeing them, Mordred bursts into laughter, but then attacks with his magic. Even with their superpowers, they are unable to overcome him, and he opens a trapdoor, dumping them into an underground pit, to what looks like a savage monster appears from the dark hole, which turns out to be Baby Etrigan. Wow. I love Baby Etrigan. I don't ever want children, but I love me some Baby Etrigan. Oh, wow. We'll get to that in a bit.
That sounded not right at all.
What?
It's like you're ordering something. I want some Baby Etrigan.
No! Ew, dude.
I get a side of rats with that.
Reduced to the fire-breathing baby, Edrigan attacks the other Leaguers, but Wonder Woman applies a firm hand, and the baby bursts to tears. Wonder Woman comforts him and then burps him into peacefulness. Upon realizing that the monster needs a diaper change, however, she immediately hands Edrigan off to Superman, and then Wonder Woman, along with Batman and Green Lantern, rush off, stating, "Now that's a job for Superman." Mordred turns himself into an adult, thus banishing him. Oh, wait, that must have been a picture. Oops. Sorry, cut that line out of there. Holy crap. The League make their way out of the dungeon, and after Wonder Woman lectures all the rampaging children in the Big Sister Manor, she clears them off to safety. The group's attempt to the job by stealth this time. Batman orders them to encircle Mordred's throne quietly and sneak up to him. The plan doesn't go quite smoothly, as they soon are forced to retreat into Mordred's castle. While locking Mordred out of it, inside, Green Lantern offers one of his many childish ideas, but is immediately shut down by Batman again, who begins to bark orders. Batman pauses, however, upon seeing the hurt and disappointed look on Lantern's face, and then suggests that the Lantern go through his plan and fight Mordred while the others take another approach. In the end, they manage to get the amulet away from Mordred, and Etrigan bites into it, destroying it. That actually may be alternate art for this episode. I don't know yet. Oh, dude, that was awesome. I love that. I love that scene. Maybe Etrigan rules. However, Mordred still has absorbed enough of the amulet's magic to wield it against the League, and he subdues all of them as he holds them helpless, preparing to kill them. A little girl appears wanting her mother. Flustered, Mordred tells her to go away, and the League taunts him, saying that for all his power, he is still just a boy with no idea of an adult's responsibilities. Furious, Mordred uses his remaining power to transform himself into a grown-up man, and subjecting himself to his own spell, sending him into the other dimension. Morgan appears, telling him he has used up the last of the amulet's power. As he rages, Morgan says, more in sorrow than in anger, "Don't you realize what you've done?" What he's done, she explains as she restores the League and the world to normal, is to break the spell she cast, giving him eternal youth. Now all he has is eternal life. The League is not sure what this means. In a remote castle, Morgan returns to her son, now an impossibly old man, feeble and sentinel. "Don't you worry, baby," she says, wiping a drool from his chin. "Mommy's going to take good care of you from now on."
That's such a great job to begin with. Sorry, was that out loud?
Huh?
Was that out loud? I'm sorry, folks.
Yes. I'm just going to go through these really quick, because I know you have quizzes you need to do, so. Eek! Morgan and the Brat are back. Ugh.
I don't mind Morgan. I really like her. I don't like the kid.
Yeah.
Mommy, I want my kingdom now. Mommy, when am I getting my kingdom, Mommy? I want it now.
Yeah.
Sounds like a few people of the British royalty, I know.
Yeah, really. Ain't that the truth? Bad child, no sparing the rod here. Mm. Yikes, adults everywhere are going bye-bye. Guess that's a wrap. Sorry, I've been hanging out with the Flash too much.
Great line.
The spell only banishes adults. I don't like where this is going. That's one hell of a badass-looking guillotine.
That was sick.
That was. Quote-unquote smacks kid Superman upside the head. "Will you stop messing around? We gotta find Mordred. Bet the little punk's in there."
Okay, I will say that I really liked kid Batman.
Oh, dude, I'm getting to it. "You okay, tough guy?" "Lego, I'm fine." "Oh, baby Etrigan is awesome." And then, of course,
I think he made the episode, honestly.
Huh?
He really did make the episode.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The character you would expect to see.
Uh-huh. And the GL surfboard, that was kind of cool.
That was.
That's the second time we've seen a surf/snowboard in the entire cartoon.
So we know that he liked the extreme sports.
Yes. And next one, this is just such a damn fun episode. It just is. And those be some amazing constructs.
They were.
And I wrote this all in caps again. Baby Etrigan is awesome. He ate the amulet.
It wasn't even like a little bit of a nibble. It was like,
Yeah, he chomped it. Big chicken, that's what you are. Yeah, precious. I love Kid Batman and Green Lantern. I love Kid Batman and Green Lantern. They're just so awesome. And of course, I think does he say it as a kid or as an adult? I haven't been a kid since I was 8 years old. Which,
that was when he grew up.
Yeah, which is technically true. What about you? What did you think of this last episode we're going to talk about today?
Oh my god, Easter eggs.
Yeah.
Okay, in the beginning, when they're going to get the amulet, did you notice that the bas relief against the wall, it was a Cthulhu?
Was it really?
It looked like Cthulhu. I'm like, oh my god. I didn't know what one of the villains was. I feel shame for this, but I thought it was a combination of Bane and Deadshot.
Yeah.
The glasses that he makes is Kyle's crab mask. It is Green Lantern Kyle's mask. Yes!
Well, the like first Kyle. Glasses are kind of geeky.
Yeah, and he's like, whoa, I didn't even mean to make that. That's cool.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that he's making these just through his imagination and will rather than actually putting thought into it. So maybe there is like a deeper connection to the Green Lantern power battery than we would expect.
Yeah.
Little Bats and Diana. Just the dynamic between them. Aw, tough guy. No, I'm going to go with Clark. No, I'm going to go with... I'll go with you, Bruce. No, I'll go with Clark again. Okay, I changed my mind. It's like,
whatever.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. That was awesome.
And as usual, I'm not Mr. Superman lover, so it's great to see him get his ass handed to him. I'm like, wow, he's kind of a wimp as a kid. I'm like, oh, wait, magic. Yeah. He's still a wimpy kid, though.
Well, the other thing is, what was the, when he started ordering the kids around, they're like, well, why should we listen to you? Because I'm the kid with fire coming out of my eyes.
My eyes. I got laser beams coming out of my
eyes. I'm the kid with laser beams coming out of my eyes.
I promise you, we will find all your parents, and we're going to tell.
Yeah, I'm going to tell. Yeah, that was so awesome.
Baby Etrigan saving the day.
Yeah.
And then at that point, I'm like, did we fall into Teen Titans? Did we cross the streams and go to a different part of the DCU?
As far as Teen Titans?
Yeah, it was like, it seemed like Teen Titans to me for a moment.
As far as the style, you mean?
The style, and especially Baby Etrigan.
Yeah, possibly. Now, over on World's Finest Podcast, they're actually covering Teen Titans, which I still maintain is not in continuity. But they covered... I forget what episode it was. They just released episode 80 of World's Finest Podcast. We're recording this Friday night. They released it 2 days ago. They brought up something that is in content, or that brings Teen Titans... Oh, there was a crossover episode, or some sort of stylish crossover episode, where Dwayne McDuffie apparently said that they were trying to make it a crossover with Justice League or something, so they were trying to make the point that Teen Titans is actually in continuity, but I don't know. But yeah, it could be. I don't know. Not really, though.
Well, they never actually broached the subject as to which Robin it was. And
yeah, true.
But maybe they would know better than I would, because they are much further into the DCU than I am. Mm-hmm. What else do we have? Okay, because I'm the Green Lantern geek. Giant Green Lantern robot versus the Knight. That was just awesome. Like, I was kind of expecting something like a giant Gundam, but still, just missiles and Gatling guns and okay, fire burps from Etrigan.
Yeah, those are awesome.
Stuck on the diaper duty. So we see them just totally running amok, all the kids running amok at one point, and I'm just thinking it's Lord of the Flies.
Yeah,
it's Lord of the Flies with superpowers.
Yeah.
There was a ton of Bruce and Diana Shippey stuff. Like, there was no getting away from it at any point.
Oh, well, see, that's the thing. That, you know, Bruce Timm and the rest of them said that it was a possibility that they could be together. They kind of hinted at it. They were going to make it kind of do it. You know, not make them do it. But, oh, God, this is going down the way wrong path that I wanted it to. They were going to kind of tease it and kind of will-they-won't-they thing. But, you know, whatever. It still works.
I agree. Although I would have liked some payout at the end. But that's just me. What else do I have? Okay.
Holding him in her wonder thighs.
I wish I could remember the name of the artist, so I apologize if you are a DCU fan and you are listening to this and I can't give you credit for it because I just don't have it in front of me. There is a motivational or demotivational poster that says, when you have a superpowered girlfriend, don't piss her off and make her very happy, or something along those lines. And it's got Diana grabbing Bruce and physically shaking the crap out of him. Like, you see him anime style, head going back and forth, and her huge mouth, and her going, okay, I've had enough of this broody crap, we're going out, we're going to take me on a nice date, you're going to take me dancing, and you're going to take me to a good restaurant. And then we're going to have mad passionate sex. And I'm just thinking, wow, that totally is what happens in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, Batman being the mental master as always, even as a kid, being a manipulator. The end, where Batman's like, I haven't been a kid since I was 8. Way to be a fucking douche. Seriously, way to be a douche, Batman.
Well, honestly, see, I don't think
your girlfriend's like, it was kind of fun. No, you let her go with that. Let her be happy.
No, I know. I get what you're saying, but at the same time, you know, Wonder Woman didn't have her parents taken by some punk with a gun.
She has a mom. That's
she has. In this continuity, she has both. It just comes back to bite her in the ass a little bit later.
Oh, wait. Okay. I think I know who it is.
I'll mention it to you off air.
Okay.
But, I mean, you know, honestly, adult Batman is going to act like that. He will say something like that because, really, he hasn't been. Even though he was in this episode, he really hasn't been overall, obviously. So.
Oh, I agree, but it's still like, way to just throw that in there. Not just happy ending, okay. No, he's got to be a douche. There you go, Bruce. Parents would be so proud, especially your mom.
Anything else?
Okay. The ending with Mordred.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sorry, it's a horrible name.
Well, yeah.
I know it's Arthurian legend, and I can't really bang that, but, oh, God, it's a horrible name. And this coming from a guy who's got a hyphenated name, and his last part of the first name is Astyanax. Really. Mordred. That just sounds horrible. It sounds like morbid and morose and things that are just decaying and just that's what it feels like. The fact that he lost his eternal youth to go along with his eternal life, that has got to be a hell.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I can only... I've read and dealt with people that have Alzheimer's, and I know what that's like. I can't imagine what it's like when you're going to continually live. Is he going to be a zombie? Is he going to be a living skeleton? But that ties up Morgana.
Yeah, we don't see
it's M for the entire rest of the season.
Yep.
For the rest of the
series.
Anything.
Yep.
She's never going to be another threat. She's going to be worrying about her son.
Yep.
She might show up in another story like, oh, I've got to find a way to bring that spell back, but...
No, she doesn't, actually. This is the final episode that we see her in.
But it just... Yeah, that's going to suck.
Yeah, it does. Alright, so... I think you're going to hear some episode audio, maybe, or some quotes, I'm not sure. So, that's it for us.
Well, if it isn't the monster killer.
I was lucky. So was everybody else. Still don't think I belong up here.
That's the point. Someone like you will keep us honest.
Gee, Bats, I don't know. Don't get me wrong, I enjoy a good radiation burn as much as the next guy, but I don't think...
So, see you soon?
You just might.
Well, before we close the show, what did you think of the overall, quote-unquote, I guess you could say, quote-unquote, new cartoon, but the overall continuation from season 2 to season 3?
I think it's tighter. I think the pacing's a lot better, and we get a heavy, what's the word I'm looking for? A nice injection of new characters that we can really like.
Yep.
Especially Green Lantern, Green Arrow, Question. Even, you know, Captain Atom to a small degree, and Kara, which grows on you like a fungus.
I don't like her until she changes into the skirt, but that doesn't happen until season 4 or season 5, so... I don't like that uniform on her. I like the other one when she changes to be more like Superman's uniform, but anyway. Yeah, I agree. It's a solid, you know, start to a new show, to a new season, and it's so expansive and massive. I mean, that watchtower, oh my god. They have to have staff there because it's so friggin' big.
It's huge.
Yeah, very much so. So, thank you for joining us here on the Secret Origins Podcast. There are several ways to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com. You can comment on each episode post. Join the forums, protoconempire.com/nexus. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter. Secret Origins and TFG and Mike are mine. What is your Twitter?
It is Caminiti Style. CaminiTiStyle.
Become a fan of...
M-O-U-S-E.
Become a fan on Facebook. Search Geekcast Radio Network. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Secret Origins Podcast and wish you'll join us next time when we'll be reviewing 4 more episodes of Justice League Unlimited. I'm just calling it Justice League. I don't care if it's Justice League Unlimited. 4 episodes of Justice League Season 3, which has now become Justice League Unlimited. Those being This Little Piggy, The Return,
sorry,
The Greatest Story Never Told, and Ultimatum. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Lupus Convoy.
Thank you for listening. Until next time. So, this past Monday, which was the 21st of June 2010, my esteemed co-host here, Mr. Lupus Convoy, celebrated his 29th birthday. Happy birthday to you, happy birthday to you, happy birthday, Lupus, happy birthday to you. See, I told you there would be singing. I told you.
Evil.
I fucking told you.
Evil.
I told you on Twitter that there would be singing. Muhahaha.
You only so close.
One more so year close. Until you're 30.
Not according to my stepdad. I'm still 24.
No, you're not still 24. Anyway, so happy birthday, dude. Hope it was a good one.
Thank you.
Yeah. See you next week, or see you in 2 weeks, everybody.
Bye, guys.